Exit number 12404, Rail 1.
Wing Commander Brown, Rail 1. Can we start with something about your background, where you came from, and what your father did for a living, and so on?
Well, I was born in London, 1914. Lived in a Mews flat in Devonshire Mews, which I think still exists. My mother died in the big flu epidemic, 1918. My father was a chauffeur motor mechanic, and I was brought up by two maiden aunts, sisters of my brother, of my father, mostly in Havant, down in Hampshire, where I did my early schooling, then in Croydon, until 1929, I joined the Royal Air Force.
What gave you that idea?
My brother, in fact, had joined and become an aircraft apprentice at Halton. And he went there 3 years earlier than myself. The course there lasted 3 years. I joined in September 29. And did my 3 years training at Halton.
What did you think of the course at Halton?
Well, now I know it was a very good course indeed, and the whole idea of it was started by Lord Trenchard, was to build up a corps of engineers to run the technical side of the RAF. And it proved extremely successful, because until the end of the war, the Halton apprentices, who were always known as Trenchard's brats, literally were the be-all and end-all of the technical side of the Royal Air Force. Many reached air rank. A lot of them became pilots, like myself. And the old place still exists.
But did you not appreciate the course at the time?
Not really. I was much too interested in playing football and cricket, I think. I think one was a bit young to appreciate just exactly what it was all about. It was during the Depression, and it was fairly hard for people, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I think most of us did. I passed out in 32 and went to the RAF College at Cranmore as a fitter aero engine. Spent a year in the workshops there overhauling various engines of the aircraft we had there, which were Arrow Tutors, Armstrong, Whitworth Atlas, Siskin, Bulldog, on which the cadets were taught to fly.
Was it your own ambition to fly?
Always, and we were very fortunate there, because every morning the instructors would have a 10-minute flight in the aircraft to make sure it was serviceable for the cadets who came along afterwards. And as a dual-control aircraft, we were always able to jump in the back or the front with one of the instructors. Inevitably, that meant we were allowed to fly the aeroplane with them. And long before I went on a pilot's course, I was looping and rolling aeroplanes to my heart's delight every morning. It really was as far as I was concerned, quite exciting. I played a lot of sport there, and the group captain commanding was a fellow called Philip Babington, was also a very keen sportsman. And I had the opportunity of flying him around once or twice. And I think that, plus my sporting activities there, gave me the chance of being selected for pilot training. And this didn't happen very often at that time, because Cranwell was a big command, quite big. And to my memory, I was the only second airman to go on a pilot's course all the 3 years I was there. So I was rather fortunate. Having been selected, passed the medical, I waited for my posting. Found I was posted to number 10 squadron at Boscombe Down, heavy bomber squadron. This upset me no end. I thought I was going to learn to fly and not become a fitter on a bomber squadron. But having arrived there, I was interviewed by the wing commander, a fellow called Frew, Bunty Frew. I think he was a Rhodesian or a South African, who said, "You're going on a pilot's course, Brown." I said, "Well, I thought I was, sir." He said, "Well, you're not going until the football season's over." When we won the RAF Cup, he said, "You can go on your football, you can go on your flying course." So I said, "Thank you, sir." We won the RAF Cup, and he was true to his word. Onto my flying course I went. Strangely enough, my wife's brother had served with him in South Africa, and I was able to produce an ancient photograph which showed them all sitting there, including Bunty Frew, which he found extremely interesting.
How did you get on with learning to fly? Did it come easily, or did you have any problems?
No, frankly, I found it came easily, because I'd had very good tuition at Cranwell, even though a lot of the flying was what were called more advanced types, but the instructors there were absolutely first class. And another strange coincidence, I went to air service training at Coventry, which was a civilian organisation doing RAF training. And who should be my instructor but a fellow called Flight Lieutenant Williams, Trip Williams, who said, "What are you doing here, Brown?" I said, "I've come to learn to fly, sir." He said, "I taught you to fly at Cranwell, Brown." So he said, "Okay, come on, we better get on with it." So he was my instructor. And we did our 40 or 50 hours in Avro Cadets. Then got posted to number 9 FTS at Thornaby, which was the Advanced Flying Training School. All somewhat different to what goes on now. It was much more flying club stuff than serious flying. There we had Hawker Hearts, Ordex, Furies, beautiful aeroplane. I think we had the odd Gauntlet.
What was so good about the Fury?
To me, the last of the aeroplanes may sound a ridiculous statement, but it really was a beauty. You sat behind this 12-feet of Rolls-Royce engine, great shining bonnet on it, and it handled beautifully. It really was a superb aeroplane. Difficult to remember just how much flying one did without looking at the logbook. But I think when we finished, I had done 120 hours, I think, or 125 maybe, and was then a squadron qualified fighter pilot, which, as I say, is a bit different than what goes on now. In, In February of 37, I was posted to 111 Fighter Squadron at Northolt, which was equipped with Gloucester Gauntlet. Nice aeroplane, biplane. Of course, the Gladiator followed it, which was a development of it. And flew these until 1938, January, when we started to be equipped with Hurricanes. We were the first squadron to be equipped with monoplane fighters, and there was a fair amount of excitement in the media.
Can you remember the day that the Hurricanes arrived?
They arrived, the first one, I think, in late November or early December. I wouldn't be too sure of that. But we weren't allowed near them. I was a sudden pilot then, and the squadron pilots weren't allowed near them to fly them until January of 38, when I think we probably had three or four aeroplanes by then.
What impression did the Hurricane first make on you?
Perhaps I could elaborate a little on the first flights that we did. Obviously, the squadron commander and flight commanders flew the aircraft first, and a few visitors from group had a flight. But then on, from memory, January the 18th, 1938, and this is described by Roy Dutton, who was one of our pilots, in the book Hurricane at War. We were lined up and permitted to fly this aeroplane. We were not allowed to retract the undercarriage. We were not allowed to close the hood. And we were told to do three circuits and landings. I think Roy Dutton flew it before I did, and I took over from him, did my three circuits and landings, and my impression was nothing more than seemed to take the curvature of the earth to get airborne. Very noisy, because of course we had the hood open. And no top wing to keep the sun off your eyes. It was the first monoplane I'd flown. But having said that, I thought it was quite an easy aeroplane to fly. I don't think anyone really had any difficulty with a Hurricane.
What was the idea of keeping the hood open and the undercarriage down?
Group and Air Ministry, I think, were scared stiff that this aeroplane would get a reputation of being difficult, too fast for people. For example, we weren't allowed to do aerobatics until we'd done 50 hours of flying in the thing. Not that we took any notice of that, but that was the ruling, and I still have in my logbook a letter from my squadron commander saying you are now permitted to do aerobatics, which of course was quite ridiculous. But having said that, they did not want people praying in these aeroplanes all over the countryside, and anyone who got it wrong left the squadron fairly sharply, and one or two did get it wrong.
You just showed me this document. It's dated 6th of May 1938, and it's addressed to you from the squadron leader commanding 111 Squadron. And it says, authority is given to you to carry out aerobatics in Hurricane aircraft. You are reminded that the minimum height is 5,000 feet and no spinning is to be attempted. Did you obey it?
Oh, yes. I think we all did aerobatics all right, out of sight of the squadron commander. But They were scared, and perhaps with good reason, I don't know. It was important that you introduce this the hurricane and, of course, the Spitfire, which came a year or so afterwards, that no one got the impression that the thing was difficult or dangerous or anything like that. The media made an absolute meal of the hurricane.
In what way?
We were wonder boys, I mean, specially chosen, you know, travelling at these vast speeds and the G that we pulled and all this sort of rubbish. I mean, we got visitations practically every day from the press and the media and the staff colleges and everyone else to see these things in action. Perhaps I could tell an amusing story, at least it's amusing now, which I don't think's ever been told before. I certainly haven't told, except to an odd friend. When I'd finished my three circuits and landings, I left the aeroplane parked with the brakes on, engine running, at the top end, the north end of Northolt Aerodrome. If anyone knows Northolt, it was a grass airfield. And when you took off south towards Western Avenue, you went down quite a steep slope before the airfield levelled out. And an Australian pilot who was seconded to us took over from me. Being January, middle of winter, the airfield was always very wet. And off he went, leaving a great big skid mark down the airfield. Crept Western Avenue, and off he went. Went round, did his circuit, did his approach, and did the shortest landing that any hurricane has ever done. I had left the brakes parked, obviously, and he'd forgotten to unpark them. And people will find it difficult to believe, but this is absolutely true. He did his first circuit and landing with the brakes parked. If it hadn't been wet, he wouldn't have done it, of course.
Should we know his name?
No, I wouldn't want to say his name. Not long afterwards, he landed an aeroplane with the wheels up, and then he left us in a bit of Australia or not, I wouldn't know. Nor believe that one could take a wheel aeroplane and not tip it on his nose. It didn't happen. Squadron chosen establishment. Work out the tactics. So quite a bit of our time was spent working out tactics against bombers, Battles and Harrows and all sorts of aeroplanes like that. Strangely enough, we did little or no fighter v fighter tactics. I don't know why. I think they concentrated on more on the bombers defending themselves against fighters rather than training the fighter squadrons to do air combat fighter v fighter.
What were the tactics against bombers in those days?
Well, we did all sorts of things. I mean, we even, apart from the obvious ones of attacking from the rear, attacking from the quarter, we would do head-on attacks. We even tried out doing a half loop in which we came up from underneath inverted and met them going head on. I remember trying this out on a battle on one occasion. And we didn't miss by very much. It was a pretty ridiculous maneuver, but you can understand people saying, well, look, you know, you're going to get away from his guns. He won't see you. And providing you can judge it right, there's a chance you can get a shot at him.
Did you know much about the characteristics of German bombers at that time?
None whatsoever. None whatsoever. Or fighters. Um, in fact, it wasn't until 1939, after Munich, that I think we fired our guns for the first time. We'd had the aeroplanes well over a year before we ever fired our guns. And that was a bit of a rush job. Flew up to Northolt, from Northolt up to Sutton Bridge, I think it was. So we didn't get, even though we were a pick squadron for that sort of work, we didn't get a lot of air combat training or experience. We had to learn the hard way when the war started.
What happened at the Munich crisis? Did it make much of an effect on you?
Not really. I can't recall. I say, apart from we rushed off to fire our guns, I can't recall that we did anything more, perhaps a bit more intensive on our tactical work with the bomber squadrons.
Did you feel that a war was coming by then?
Really, no. Not really. The old business of it can't happen to us. One is no better briefed, I don't think, in the lower ranks of the service of what's happening than the average chap who picks up the newspaper.
Did you have any visits from foreign air forces?
Oh, yes. 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 In fact, again, one looks through a logbook. Arab delegations I saw we had. We used to get, the attaché's club used to arrive, and we would give them formation displays. We even had the Brigade of Guards down on one occasion, I seem to remember. And we used to give squadron takeoffs. No aerobatics, never did formation aerobatics officially in the Hurricane. It wasn't much of an aeroplane for that sort of job. We did a lot of formation aerobatics in Gauntlets, of course, but little or none in the Hurricane. Tried it out on several occasions, but it wasn't an easy aeroplane for that sort of thing. So most of our flypasts were more or less straight and level.
Did you have any accidents at that time?
No. I didn't break my first aeroplane until... Oh, correction, I did. Yes. When I was learning to fly, I was being taken in the formation of three of us. We're going to Catfoss, I think it was, armament practice camp. Got caught out in fog in the Vale of York, and we all had to force land. Unfortunately, my field wasn't long enough, and I ran through the wire fence at the end of it and gently tipped up to my nose, broke the propeller. That was the only damage. Some months later, my brother sent me a newspaper cutting. I think it was Yorkshire Evening News or something. There was a picture of my aeroplane on its nose and my name beneath it. And he bought some fish and chips, which were wrapped in this newspaper. That was the first he'd heard of it, obviously. And I still have that bit of newspaper.
Did sergeant pilots and officers mix, or were you kept rigidly apart?
Not in the squadron, no. We had separate officers in the squadron. We had a crew room, obviously. But we mixed very well when we were doing our flying and pre and after flying. grand bunch of lads we had in 111. Very good indeed they were. Some very good pilots among them.
Did any of them make a big name for themselves later?
Yes. Michael Robinson. Michael Lister Robinson. Brucey. Harry Broadhurst was my squadron commander. He commissioned me, in fact.
How did he run the squadron?
Oh, very well. He was a good airman, was Harry. Very good airman indeed. And he kept us towing the line. And one knew he was a good airman. And I think it helps a lot. Good leaders are, I wouldn't say they're few and far between, but when you've got a good one, he's worth his weight in gold. Still alive, Harry, lives not very far from here. I haven't seen him for many years. But of course he went on to top rank of the Royal Air Force.
What do you remember about the declaration of war?
Not a lot. I seem to remember the sirens. Can't remember the day. Was it a Sunday or a Saturday?
Yes, a Sunday.
Sunday, yes. I seem to remember the sirens going. Can't remember if they... No, they didn't scramble us. We didn't fly.
You were at Northolt, were you?
We were at Northolt still, and we didn't get airborne until... I think about the 6th of September.
How did you feel about the war declaration? Did you feel sick about it?
No, quite honestly, I don't think it had a lot of impact. I don't think anyone was particularly perturbed at our level. Again, I think you always feel it isn't going to happen to you, you know, until it does happen, of course, then the whole situation changes. Yes, it was not until the 8th of September that I did a night flight in a hurricane in which we were checking up on the blackout.
Was that your first night flight in a hurricane?
Oh, no, we've done quite a lot. But the government decided to black London out, I think. You know, and we went off. Pretty unfortunate, this flight, I remember it now. My flight commander was a fellow called Darwood, Sidney Darwood. And we had a young pilot officer, Erskine, not in the family, but it was a well-known family. And being 111, whether it was night or day, we took off in formation. And we took off, the three of us. I was flying on the left.